Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top five sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. 5 at 5 with Mully and Haw starts now.
How big of a step did Mitch Trubisky make in the Lions game, after which Matt Nagy said it was Mitch's day? Was it the beginning of a late-season playoff push that will change people's minds about the quarterback, or just a good day against a bad team?
Well, I'm trying very hard not to be negative about it because I thought it was great, the 9-play, 90-yard drive at the end of the game and the game-winning touchdown and the fact that the Bears were able to rally. But... and there is always a but. The Lions are 3-8-1 on the year. They have led in every single game they have played. They have lost 8 of their last 9 games, and they've lost them in exactly the same way. As much as we want to credit Mitch for a wonderful victory, the fact of the matter is that that was a patented Lions loss. That is the loss they have had all the time this season. And Mitch has thrown 13 touchdown passes on the season. 6 of them have come against the Lions. So this is his anti-kryptonite team, okay? He's kryptonite to them. He is their boogeyman. The Lions have scored 92 points in the first quarter of their games. That sounds like a lot, mainly because it is. It's the second most in the league. So the fact that the Lions went out and took a lead the way they did, even though David Blau became the first rookie to throw 2 touchdown passes in a first quarter since Marcus Mariota, and no one else ever. That's ridiculous. Think about that statistic. No one else. Mariota for Bear Fit, for all the fans in Bearsville, Mr. David, that are worrying about who's coming next, and David Blau. So I just think, will this be a push that gets the Bears to the playoffs? Is this the way it all starts? Let's hope so. But the reality of it is that game was as much about Detroit losing in Detroit fashion as it was Mitch saving the season.
Fair enough. You know, though, I think in Chicago you don't care about Detroit. And I do think it's possible to compliment a quarterback in town without having to schedule a coronation. And I think we have to find the middle ground there that exists. So if you say that he did take a step, I'm not saying that he's an all pro. I'm not saying that he turned the corner. I'm not saying you believe in him for 2020. I'm saying he took a step. And when you look at where he was going into this game, going into the Giants game, this is the second game in a row where he made progress by anyone's definition. So yes, the Lions stink, and that they were destined to lose that football game. And I don't think anybody really felt like they were ever going to win it, because they are the Lions and they are, you know, historically a team that blows leads. Mitch plays well against bad teams. He's a bottom feeder of quarterbacks. He's got 122 passer rating against the Lions and Redskins this year, 92 touchdown to interception ratio. That's dominating bad teams. Against everybody else, it's a 71 passer rating with 4 touchdowns and 5 picks. That's not good enough. Nobody should pretend that it is. Nobody is. I'm saying that he took a step. He had a clutch drive when they needed it. He shook off an uneven first half, and he stepped up after halftime. He benefited from a balanced attack. Good for Matt Nagy for recognizing what he needed to do and calling plays that got the best out of his quarterback. He made some big-time throws to Anthony Miller. Those were good catches, but a couple of those throws were really clutch when he needed to make them. They were accurate, and this is a guy that used his legs. He had to take a step forward because there wasn't much further back he could go without losing his job. So progress, but in the context of where he was when he started the game, is still progress.
Yeah, I would call it progress, dare I say steady incremental progress the past couple of weeks. The Giants are a very putrid football team. The Lions are not much better. They might be on even ground as far as bad teams go, but you did see a lot more from Mitch on Thursday, and I've been as hard on Trubisky as almost anybody, but when you watch that game, you see some of the throws that he did make. He was hitting some pretty tight windows. The touchdown pass to my guy, Jesper Horsted, I thought was an excellent play. Anthony Miller down the stretch.
Why is he your guy now?
Because his name is Jesper.
He catches a touchdown pass, now he's your guy?
He was my guy before that. I'd be a big Princeton fan over here.
Ivy League, baby.
Long-time Tigers supporter. I don't know if it's the beginning of a turning of a corner. I'm not going to say that. You know, Dallas didn't look great on Thursday, but it is a step up, certainly in terms of the defense that he's going to face this week at Soldier Field. So we'll see if he can string a few of these together now. It's a step in the right direction. Just because they're coming against bad teams, two really, really bad teams, we can't stress that enough, it's not like he went out there and played terribly. And I think, obviously, it was his best game of the season statistically as well, with the three touchdowns and 338 yards. Pretty good completion percentage. So we'll see how he fares against the Cowboys coming up in just a few days. But I think definitely you have to call it a step forward and steady incremental progress. Studs, you're up.
Okay, good morning, guys. Good to be here. So the theme with this game from Mitchell Trubisky is it almost bothers me that he has these good games, and even, yes, it is against bad teams, because it reminds me of the fact that Mitch can do these things. He's capable of playing well. He's capable of making these great throws, and you see why in these moments, in these little glimpses, in that tight window that he hit to Anthony Miller down the right sideline that set up the game-winning touchdown, in the throw to Jesper Horsted that tied the game. You see why they picked him where they picked him. You can see why they fell in love with him. And it's maddening to me, because he's more than likely to come out and make some bad throws and play badly down the stretch than he is to play well. Now, I hope he plays well. I'm probably the only one that's still left on them, left thinking that they're going to, or not thinking, but hoping and praying that they're going to win out and somehow climb into the playoffs, as unlikely as it is. It was progress. It's a second game in a row where you see him taking a step in the right direction. At the end of the day, though, Molly Moore, to your point, it was probably more of a good game against a horrible team. And if he plays well again against Dallas, then I'll start to believe in him a little bit more. But for right now, it's just a good game against a bad team, and let's see what happens next.
You can only play against the team that's in front of you. I know some people hate that, but that's just a fact. He played well in the fourth quarter, but I still have a problem when he didn't put his head down and get that first down earlier in the game. And Nagy had to, like, walk away and mutter underneath his play sheet. And just, I mean, he talked to Mitch for 2 seconds, and he had to walk away before he said something that he was going to regret. He keeps having some decent fourth quarters. And when the game is on the line, which it was at that point, he stepped up in his wide. You know, it's always interesting what happens when the offensive line gives you a couple seconds to throw, the receivers run the right routes, Mitch throws the right ball, and then the receivers actually catch the ball. So when all of those four things happen, oh, and let's add a fifth thing, the right play is called, then good things will happen. Now, we need to hope that this momentum carries over into I'm actually glad they're playing Thursday, that there's only a week, that it's not all the way to Sunday, so Mitch can't sit there and overthink it. Okay, let's just get to Thursday, and let's take on the Cowboys, who are a complete mess right now.
Yeah, you know, I definitely get that question.
Akeem Hicks returned to practice Sunday and can return as early as December 15th against the Packers. How big of an impact can Hicks make? And if the Bears lose to the Cowboys, should Hicks even play?
I think he should play if he can get on the field. I think every Sunday in the NFL season, if you're at the stage of his career, it means something, especially for a guy coming back from an injury. What does he mean to the Bears defense? Look, you can make the argument, and it's a pretty good one, that he is the most valuable defensive player after this season, because when he went out, they started to decline at times. Still been a very good defense. With him, it's at a different level. They stopped the run better. I think you can see more attention paid him, and then frees up Khalil Mack more. So he can be as unblockable as he can be unlikable. And I think that's the best way to put it about Akeem Hicks. It doesn't matter. He can get to. He definitely plays football in a bad mood, and they need him. And if he can get healthy, get back on the practice field, get back on the game field. He will make a difference. So whenever he can get back, sooner the better, because his impact on the defense is exceeded only by one guy, and that one guy is Khalil Mack.
Oh, yeah. Check me out, man.
Check him out. I think Akeem is a huge part of this team. I think that they are a significantly better team with him as opposed to without him. I think he is their second best defender outside of Khalil Mack, and I think that he's a dangerous character that can cause a ton of problems. I also think if there's any chance he can play, he should play. I'm a big believer in compartmentalizing injuries and taking that psychological hurdle and making sure that injury is left in this year and it's not something that lingers over into the offseason and next season. I'm a big believer in that. I think that if he's ready to play, then you've got to play him. I'd also like to remind everyone that there is no reason, given the fact that they don't have a first-round draft pick, explain to me how it benefits them not to play him if he's able to play. So I think that, again, you know, if he gets medical clearance, he ought to play, and I think he'll make a big impact. And they really need to win this game against Dallas, because that would be a ton of fun to see him back in that team and them go up there, and who knows.
Well, I'll answer the second part of the question first. Even if the Bears lose this Thursday, Akeem should play. I'm sure he's champing at the bit. I'm sure he's I'm 100% sure that he's upset about the injury. He seems like he's upset quite often, but it was a bad break for him this year, and the Bears defense has certainly suffered without him. They have not been able to defend the run the same way as we saw last year. I mean, they've been ran over almost at will by some of these guys. I mean, Scarborough had a pretty decent game on Thursday. You saw Latavius Murray crush them in that Saints game. Todd Gurley ran all over him. I mean, they've been getting hurt by the run much more often than they were last season. I think you can look at Hicks and his absence as a direct correlation there. So good that he's back to practice. Hopefully they can pull out this victory against Dallas on Thursday to keep the relevance going this season and keep us afloat for a little bit longer here in terms of interest. And even if they don't win, yes, he should get back in the lineup. If you're healthy, you play, period. End of.
I'll also start with the second question. First of all, it's not if the Bears are going to lose to the Cowboys, because they're not going to lose to the Cowboys. They're winning out, baby.
Okay.
So they're going to beat the Cowboys, okay, and he's going to play against the Packers. Let's start with that. But I will, all right, fine. If they lose either way, yes, he should play. Because I don't think you can keep him off the field, first of all. He's not going to let them keep him off the field, and so he should absolutely be out there. I don't really believe in shutting guys down just because they were injured. If he's fully healthy and cleared, put him out there. It'd be a different situation if this was a young quarterback who the Bears are dependent on for the future that had gotten hurt. Yeah, okay, and then they're out of it. Yeah, okay, maybe take him back. But a defensive lineman who has this big of an impact on the defense, I say put him out there. And so, to his impact on the defense, you guys are right. His impact is even more clear now than it was last year or early in the season, because as soon as he went out, that's when Khalil Mack's production went down. That's when the running defense took a step way back. And Kev just mentioned the guys that they were ran over by this season. Some guys that really hadn't done anything in a long time coming up to their game against the Bears. So he needs to play, and his impact is going to be huge once he hopefully returns against the Packers. I think you're going to see Khalil Mack starting to make more plays. The running defense is going to look a lot better, and hopefully they put a run together with him back on the defense.
Well, when he waddles his way back onto the football field, he will make a huge impact. But I have to disagree, not shockingly. If they do lose, and I don't think they will, but if they do lose to the Cowboys, then he should not play the rest of the season. Okay,
why?
Because his impact, we all agree that his impact is huge on this defense. If they don't win, unfortunately, they're not going to make the postseason. And Akeem Hicks is not like a third-year player. He's got some tread on him, so he should waddle around on the sidelines, then waddle back onto the field in Bourbonnais when they take on the first or second team offense down there. Okay, that's the next time I. If they lose,
go
then
climb
they
under
shut
your bed.
Down.
This is you all the time. You don't want anyone to play.
Absolutely not. There's
you
only feel so many like more snaps.
This is what I'm saying.
There's only
you
so many more snaps for him.
Only so many at bats. Right. Only so Absolutely. Many pitches. Only so
did
many.
You want
snaps.
Me to change? Did you want me to? Did you want me to change what I normally say?
I totally
believe that. I believe in it. And I'm sticking by it. There's no reason for him to go out there and take 60 snaps when they don't matter. They'll matter again next year. This team will be back together on the defensive. The defense will look very similar to what it looks like right now next year. And he's a huge part of that. We've all said that. So let's make sure he's there and 100% healthy. We don't need another injury in a game that may not matter. But if they do beat the Cowboys, and I think they'll beat the Cowboys, then waddle out there against the Packers, baby.
You raise a lot of great questions.
When evaluating Ryan Pace, does the recent success of draft picks Roquan Smith and Anthony Miller, along with the contribution of free agent tight end Jesper Horsted, offset the disappointing season by Adam Shaheen, combined with the struggles of other high draft picks like Trubisky and Leonard Floyd?
Whew! No. Jesper Horsted, I'm sorry. Let's just calm
hold
down.
Hold on now.
Yeah.
Take it easy.
Exactly.
Take it easy.
Let's just calm down, all right? That's fine. It just shows you how bad a pick Adam Shaheen was that an undrafted free agent can do more than him. So I think that is an absolute indictment. I don't know about recent success. I think when you look at the entirety of the year, you're going to come out of it with the question mark about Roquan. Let's see if Anthony Miller can keep his strong season turnaround going, but he needed a strong turnaround because there was a time there where you wondered if he could run a route. So I got to see how those guys end up at the end of the year. And the Trubisky pick was a killer. That's a franchise killer, right? Anybody watch last night? Anybody watching what's going on in the NFL? I mean, that was a rough one, and it's going to be hard to really feel good about it. The Bears, supposedly, Ryan Pace was out. He was spotted at Michigan, so he's scouting that game, and the thinking is that he's looking at maybe some of the corners, maybe some defensive linemen. So that's another shot against him if you start redrafting positions. Yeah, I think he's fallen.
Yeah, he's not falling.
But there are other guys that were on the field. A couple guys from Michigan.
I just look at this as, and we're reminded on a weekly basis of the quarterbacks that got away. And there's Deshaun Watson, and then there's Patrick Mahomes. And every week and every season, you're going to be reminded of what, you know, Mitch Trubisky isn't and what the Bears don't have. And I get that. But I do believe this, and I don't know why it strikes me this way. When you miss big in the first round, I think sometimes you can compensate for those big misses if you supplement your roster in a way that shows that you know what you're doing draft-wise, with your second-round pick and your third-round pick and in the fourth round, and you can build a complete roster to almost overcome the big whopper of a mistake at quarterback that you made. And I thought the Bears were on the track of doing that this season, before this season. That's why sometimes when I see the Adam Shaheen swing and a miss, I almost wonder if it's worse to me. It seems worse to me and almost more egregious than missing on Trubisky, because at least with Trubisky, and I know this is an ongoing conversation, but he had conviction in what he wanted, and he moved up to get it. And you needed a quarterback at that time. And there were a lot of teams that were going to pass on Patrick Mahomes. Not so much Deshaun Watson, but Mahomes would have been a bit of a reach at number two for a lot of teams. But you can't blow the second round pick, because that's just talent. You can't blow what you think is going to be guys in those positions that can help your team. And you know, you don't take a chance there.
Well, can I counter that for a moment? And I'm not arguing with you, but I am saying that the problem with Pace has been his trade-up policy. I have to have this guy. If that guy doesn't hit, if you're trading up for guys and they don't hit, you're giving up the opportunity to cover that mistake.
Fair enough. You're right there, because you limit your options and you limit your ability to kind of cover those mistakes, as you point out. They did it with Leonard Floyd. They did it with Trubisky. They did it with Anthony Miller. They did it, you know, they do it too often. And you have to be right. And so it bugs me. The Shaheen pick almost bugs me as much as the Trubisky miss, because I understand the Trubisky miss more than I understand taking a chance on a guy like that in Adam Shaheen at that spot in the draft when you cannot miss on a talent evaluation as badly as that one looks like he missed.
Yeah, I agree with you, David. I mean, you know, when you miss on a quarterback, you miss on the number two pick overall, you trade up just to move up that one spot to take the player that you thought, but a lot of people thought, could have been the best quarterback. I mean, he's clearly not the best quarterback in that draft. I don't even know if he's an NFL starter going forward, but personally, I am more offended by the Adam Shaheen pick for a lot of different reasons. It's not like this guy was hyped up. He wasn't on a lot of people's minds or draft boards. Hell, nobody even knew who he was. Nobody knew where Ashland University was. And Ryan Pace decided that the approximately 230 players that were drafted that year, that he was the 45th best player available. And he has provided so little. The only thing he's really provided is a bunch of dumbass old tweets that he had to go and delete and apologize for, and injuries upon injuries upon injuries. If you're this big and you're this good of an athlete, how the hell are you so brittle and you're getting hurt all the time? So I think on a personal level, it offends me more that Adam Shaheen was taken 45th overall. While the quarterback is most important position, that's going to set you back further. On a personal level, the Shaheen thing really does offend my sensibilities as a sports fan. Leonard Floyd, a fine player, certainly not worth where he was drafted. He plays more like, a third, fourth round pick, you could probably say. Roquan Smith looks to be a hit, although he's shown some inconsistencies. Anthony Miller has to do it much more consistently against better teams before I believe he was worth trading up for and drafting in the second round. So Ryan Pace, you delve a little bit more into the draft history. You don't have to delve that deep, actually, to know that it's been inconsistent at best. And the fact that he's been able to put together a pretty good defense and have Khalil Mack essentially fall into his lap, covering up a lot of the cracks in the pavement.
It absolutely doesn't make up or offset for how disappointing Adam Shaheen and Trubisky and to an extent Leonard Floyd have been. I mean, Adam Shaheen, you guys all said, that's just a huge swing and a miss. And hopefully after this season, they take the loss. Ryan Pace says, all right, I'm going to take the L here. We're going to move on. And I don't know if we'll ever see Adam Shaheen in the NFL again because he can't stay on the field, first of all. Jesper Horsted, made some nice plays on Thursday. And if they do find something there, cool. But you need to see more. Roquan and Anthony Miller, excuse me, have played a lot better the last couple weeks. Roquan finally looks like that top 10 pick he was looking every bit of last year. But it just doesn't offset how much they missed on Shaheen and how much they have, to this point, missed on Trubisky. It's really hard to offset that with a couple of nice draft picks and maybe a nice free agent pickup.
No. I'll go back to something Adam said. I think it was during the first question about Mitch. I think what we saw on Thanksgiving was why they traded up to get Miller. I admit that was probably as good of a game as I can remember Miller having. Now, the textures will remind me he did this, that, or the other, and this. But I'm always on what just happened. Okay, so that was as good as he's played. But Adam Shaheen, it was a gimmick. It was a hope and a prayer, and you weren't in a position to do that. Okay, I went on a rant for forever. Hashtag anybody but Floyd. Didn't want that pick beforehand. And he's actually, it seems like he's actually regressed, okay, since Hicks has gotten here. He ain't gotten better. He's gotten worse since he's gotten here. And another dumb penalty the other day against the Lions because he doesn't know how to play football. He's a track athlete mimicking a football player. No, none of this is, he has nowhere to run, nowhere to hide. I'm glad he was, Ryan Pace was smart enough to take a day off of ellipticals or swimming or bike riding or whatever he does to look so fit as a fiddle. And he knew that, you know what's a good idea? Go to the Michigan-Ohio State game. Because you know what? There might be some NFL players playing in that game. Maybe I'll go. Congratulations.
Can I just point out one other thing?
Of course.
Which is that they did trade down for Shaheen. So that again,
so
try not to, they were even try not to predetermine your draft. I think that's a good thing. Don't fall in love with a player and make it so you have to have them. But they did trade down, so I don't remember what they got, but they did get something else.
You're saying that you're glad he's at Ohio State, Michigan. Did you want him at the Division II playoffs? Or
I'm just glad he knew that that's where he should be.
Oh, okay.
He's not Ashland.
Who was Ashland playing this past weekend?
so often we expect that we just throw up these questions and they can be formed anyway or asked anyway, and we just expect responses.
If this was the road trip the Bulls were expected to band together and fight through adversity, what do they do now after more embarrassment? And how many of these three, Zach LaVine, Lauri Markkanen, and Jim Boylan, will finish the season as members of the Bulls organization?
Boy, I don't know. We left here on Wednesday, and they were already a hot mess at that point. And that was before the loss to the Warriors, which I think that Will Perdue accurately labeled shameful after the game, when to counter Jim Boylan saying he wasn't ashamed of that. It was. Those aren't the Warriors from the last couple of years. That's the Warriors G League impersonation of an NBA team. And I think they got Draymond Green back, good. But it's still a team the Bulls, given their talent, should beat. And they should have beaten the Blazers one of the two times that they played them in the last week or so. And they'd lost again to them over the weekend. And they have a chance tonight to lose three in a row on this West Coast road swing, which was supposed to be something that they had to win two out of three to be respectable. And they could go 0 for 3 if they lose in Sacktown tonight. This is not good. And I think that we look at Lauri Markkanen, and it's really frustrating. And I think that you can see, oh boy, a high draft pick in his third season letting people down in Chicago, not living up to expectations. Where have we seen that before, Bears fans? That's bad. I don't know if it's trading Lauri. I don't know if it's trading LaVine. I don't know if it's firing Jim Boylan. It's hard for me to imagine, though, if things continue down this current road, how all three of these guys are part of the same plan, and that the same plan doesn't change because this is not working.
Oh, this is not working at a absolutely unbelievable pace. It's not working. I mean, it is just absolutely painful to watch what is going on with the Chicago Bulls. They're really, really struggling, and it's the three aforementioned names. Can Zach and Lauri play together? Can they be on the same team? And if you reach the conclusion no, then unfortunately LaVine's the guy that has to go, because Markkanen is worth nothing. His trade value has to be at an all-time low. His game is at an all-time low. You know, Jim Boylan, you could keep him, fire him. You could do anything you want with him. I don't think it's going to make a huge impact. But you probably have to choose between these two guys. And if you wind up with Markkanen is the only guy that survives this season, that's an indictment on everybody.
That game against the Warriors, I mean, you want to talk about rock bottom. This team has just managed to keep digging themselves deeper and deeper and deeper into the core of this earth, where there will be no more rock bottom. They're going to end up on the other side eventually if they keep digging. They are so horrible and just unfun to watch. There have been a lot of bad Bulls teams over the past 20 years or so, but some of them are actually fun to watch. I actively get angry when I'm watching Jim Boylan attempt to coach, and I'm watching Zach LaVine take 30 shots a game, and I'm watching Lauri Markkanen disappear into thin air, although I'm shocked to see that he's actually still averaging 13 and 7 rebounds a game, which is fine statistically, but you watch it and you're not seeing the guy that he should be by now, the guy we expected him to be at this point in his career. So, you know, LaVine's got a big contract. I don't know how you're going to be able to move that. So he's making $20 million a year. You're right, Mully, on Markkanen's value. You're not going to get a bunch back for him right now. But I think step one of trying to fix this is firing the head coach, because not only is his performance and his coaching laughable, he is humiliating himself and the organization after games when they parade him out there. And he's got a big goofy smile on his face, spitting platitudes, trying to make people feel better when he is one of the biggest problems and he's an embarrassment in and of himself.
I agree, Kev. Jim Boylan's got to go. And that Warriors game, I mean, you want to talk about rock bottom. What do they say? If you lose to the worst team in the league, what are you? You're the worst team in the league. The Bulls are the worst team in the NBA right now. And then they go out and they lose to the Trailblazers too. And it wasn't even close. Like, I was here working that game, and it was like, no point did I think the Bulls were going to win that game. At no point. I knew going in they were going to lose. The entirety of the game, I knew they were going to lose. And then Jim Boylan comes out after that and says they need to keep playing the way they're playing. Like, dude, you're losing. What do you mean you need to keep playing the way you're playing? And then he has some of the most unbelievable quotes I've ever heard a coach in Chicago say, which is pretty damn impressive, and I'm sure we'll hear some of that later. They need to get rid of him. He needs to be gone. I'm sorry. He should have been gone after the Warriors game. He should have been gone after the Blazers game.
Build it.
I mean, should have been hired in the first place.
He shouldn't have been extended. I mean, It's unbelievable. He needs to be gone. I hope that he doesn't of those three guys, Levine, Markkanen, and Boylan, he's not here. You guys said it. Markkanen has no value, so he's not going anywhere right now. If you're going to move anyone, it's going to be Levine, but I think Levine and Markkanen finish out the season and Boylan ends up gone. He should be gone. I don't know why he's still here.
If you fire him, he will go. You know, listen, it's getting silly. I'm just curious. I'm not good enough with the league. You know, what would you get back for Zach? Like who's in the market for a guy like him? He's the most exciting guy on their team right now. I really think you'd have, if you got rid of all three of them, I don't think that would be enough to save the fan. You know, if you want to save the fan base, you need to get rid of the coach, unfortunately. You have to get rid of that guy. It's not all his fault, but he's the guy who's going to fall. And you got to figure out how to get, I think you need some excitement. You got to get Coby White in the starting lineup. Whether that's a good idea or not, as far as his progression, instant offense, right? What's the goal? Move the ball up and down the court quickly and put the ball in the basket. And that's something that he does. Granted, he's been doing it against other teams, second string guys, not always the first string, but that's the kind of stuff you need. You know, is Roy Williams interested in coaching the Bulls? I'm not saying that's the smartest thing in the world, but it would get people excited.
Maybe they should shut down Coby White since they're not going to the playoffs this year. You don't want to waste any of those minutes.
2.5 games out of the eighth seed.
Trust me, that question will come after Christmas.
Just saying.
I'll answer your questions, not your insults.
Which was a bigger surprise, Northwestern beating Illinois or Auburn beating Alabama? And who were the best four teams in college football?
I'm going to say the bigger surprise was Northwestern beating Illinois. I mean, here's the thing. Alabama, the way they lost, everything that happened in that game, you know, Tua is out. There's no tanking for Tua because he's not there. So, you know, Mac Jones, what was that his name? He played well. Wasn't like he was garbage, but they had two pick sixes against the kid in that game, and Auburn doesn't usually score like that, and they scored a lot of points. But when you're without your quarterback, things happen in college football. So it wasn't a complete shocker. I have no idea how Illinois managed to lose to Northwestern, having just been to the Northwestern-Minnesota game and watching what the Cats were up to and watching the majority of that season. And now how many times have they beaten Illinois? They are
5 in a row.
They apparently are a much better program than Illinois, and even if they're not going bowling. So that was a big result to me, and it really did surprise me that the Cats got on the road and managed to win at Illinois. That to me was the bigger surprise. Now, if Alabama can hit a 30-yard field goal, I mean, the left upright clanked that thing. So
doink.
Doink. There goes Saban out of the playoff. As far as the college playoffs are concerned, I would say that Ohio State is the number one team in the country, followed by LSU and Clemson. And then this will sort out, so I would keep Georgia ahead of Utah because I think it will sort out.
Right now, I think you're probably right. I think Georgia, with another loss, though, probably falls out of that mix. And then you're going to have to be able to choose between Utah and Oklahoma. And if they were playing each other, I think I would pick Oklahoma. But in terms of fairness, you might look at Utah sneaking into the playoff if you look at everything. So I look at Clemson, LSU, Ohio State, not necessarily in that order. And then the fourth probably being Utah after all is said and done as being the four playoff teams. I don't know if Utah would belong in that scenario. As far as Northwestern, Illinois, and Auburn, Alabama, I think Auburn on any given Saturday is more qualified to say they could beat Alabama, especially this year with Alabama struggling without their starting quarterback. I don't know what Illinois was doing. They're playing at home. They're playing the rival. They've had a turnaround season. There's no excuse for them not to be more ready to play that team under those conditions and win a game against Northwestern's third or fourth string quarterback and a running back that was a defensive back about a month ago. That was bad. I don't know if you can undo all the goodwill in one afternoon, but Lovie Smith sure tried. That was a bad loss for Illinois.
Yeah, we're up against it here, so I'll go quickly. Northwestern beating Illinois shocked me when you thought the Illini could be turning a corner. Northwestern having a terrible season. The best four teams, first three were easy. It's the undefeated teams, LSU, Ohio State, Clemson. David, I'm with you on Utah, if not for nothing else, but just to get some different blood, a little Pac-12 action in the playoff would make me a happy camper.
I agree, guys. Northwestern beating Illinois. I mean, not shocking because it's a very Illinois thing to do, but giving up 378 yards rushing to this Northwestern team is just flat out embarrassing. Top four teams in college football, you guys all said Ohio State, LSU, Clemson. I'm with you guys on Utah. Give me the Utes. If Georgia beats LSU, they're in, obviously, but
is
give me
LSU
the Utes.
In?
LSU, yeah, I think so.
What, so Georgia, you know, and LSU make it if Georgia wins.
Yeah, I think LSU is locked up, even if they, because, you know, you lose to Georgia, that's, you know, SEC championship. I think they're in. But if Georgia loses, then give me the Utes if they win.
No shot on the Utes. It's Oklahoma. So the top four teams in the country are LSU, Ohio State, I guess Clemson. But if anybody watch any Clemson games this year? No, because they don't play anybody, right? I mean, the only game I remember watching Clemson is that goofy game against North Carolina. Was that against North Carolina earlier in the year, right, with the whole going for two or going for the tie with Mac Brown? It was like in week three. It was like back in September.
So your Irish would want no part of them.
Who, Clemson?
Yeah.
No, probably not. But I'm just, I don't, my point is, I don't know how good Clemson is. I was absolutely shocked and floored that Lovie and the Illini lost to Northwestern.
All right, 312-644-6767 is the number. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.